You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
Fun fact I learned this week. This is going to blow your mind.
Can't wait.
Did you know that an entire regulation NBA basketball court fits in the penalty box?
I did know that because I have seen that.
That's crazy.
I didn't know that. That's new to me.
That is
Whole thing. The whole thing.
People talk about how athletic of a, you know, when they compare how athletic certain sports are, and they mention that, a basketball court is incredibly small when it comes to a soccer field.
Crazy. That's a wacky fact brought to you by the Cooligans. Also, brings me to my next point. Bro, our soccer pitch is too big, dude.
Maybe we should get them a little bit closer.
Yeah, dog.
You know, Maybe NYCFC and Yankee Stadium had it right the whole time. You know what? They were trying to get it as tiny as possible.
That's what I'm saying.
If the pitch can fit inside in a Sun celebration. You know, I think that's the
problem. Don't ever bring up a Tottenham player on the show again.
Youngman Sun. Anyway, hello, everybody.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
We are out here in a good mood. Both of us are.
Bruh, things are looking up for both Christian and Alexis's teams right now.
Exactly.
You can tell by the not approved by everyone on the show Everton scarf over my head of all heads.
How'd that get there? Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
Yes, we are in a good mood, even though the world is not.
It's probably only going to get worse. Feel good about today.
We're trying to. You know what? This is why I appreciated of Christina Hutchinson of Guys We F'd, a very popular show. She had said this about comedy and comedians and compared us to the musicians, the band that was playing as the Titanic was sinking. It's like the entertainment has to go on. We have to keep going. And there was something,
Do you think they needed that band playing as the Titanic?
Definitely.
Do you think anyone screaming running by going, no! Wait, I think it was one. Oh, that's a good song.
That's my song. It's slap, bro. I'm throwing my child into into a raft.
As a wife and child are getting on the raft first.
But there was something, I don't know. It
looking over the edge.
It made me feel.
I think that woman's got a lot more room on that door. That blonde guy. She doesn't have to let go of Jack.
But yes, as the comedians in the footy space, we try to bring some of that levity and positivity. We're trying our best.
We hope you're enjoying it.
Let's start. We have a big show today because we're going to be joined a little bit later by our homie, Sean Francis, who is someone who we should have had on the show probably years ago.
How the hell is this the first time this man is on the show?
I don't know how he evaded us or but I was texting him recently and I was just like, bro, do the show. Why haven't you done the show?
Yeah.
And so Sean Francis is, you may recognize him on Twitter as The Offside Rules, but
was an OG pod to our pod.
Exactly. Just an OG kind of American soccer account and person who has been involved in the game and growing the game for a really, really long time.
He's one of those people that you see around a lot and you're like, how you make money, bro? Wow, who do you know? What do you do?
It's just Tommy from Martin, bro. Like, you ain't got no job.
You ain't got no job, man. He is very much a mover and shaker. Well, moving while not moving or shaking.
Okay.
Yeah, he's an important person to know.
Exactly. So we're going to be talking to him about some of the history of American soccer and the content creation around American soccer at a very early time. So we'll get to that in a bit. But we have to talk about what's been happening in the Premier League. The Premier League title race, the relegation race. You call it a race? A relegation race? No.
Race to the bottom?
Race to the bottom?
Relegation battle.
Okay. Yeah. Because the both of our teams had very notable results in both the ends of the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Everton battling to stay up after having dealing with the points deductions. Arsenal just not wanting to deal with the bottle job accusations.
Yeah, we beat the allegations, bro. We're trying to beat the allegations.
So we'll start with Arsenal played Chelsea, a 5-0 victory. Wow, what a game.
Mike, how'd you feel about it, boss?
Yeah, I was afraid you guys were going to ask me about this.
Yeah. I mean, we'll shut your mic if you start to spin this as a positive.
No. Pochettino needs to go. He's clearly way out of his depth. We are Cole Palmer FC. It's become clearly evident over the past, I don't know what you want to call it, month, 2 months. He's our best player. And now without him, we know that he's our only player. And Chelsea's just in shambles. I don't think it's going to be a quick fix. I don't think Poch is the right guy. I think you need to fire him and bring in someone who is more tactically adept, is a better winner. You know what I
don't
mean?
Know, because he had the first half history.
First half didn't look bad.
It was 1-0. The first half wasn't bad. But what does Poch say to the team when they're going over, what are we going to do against Arsenal? Okay, look, they like to crowd the front, so I'm going to need this back four to really solidify and fight. My front three, I'm going to need you guys to really get out there and spread the pitch and try to go after him. Midfield, do whatever you want.
Have a good time out there.
Buddy, here's what I suggest you do. Run into each other a couple times. Huh? Let's really confuse them this way. This is just such a...
I mean, the player who looked really, really bad, even though Chelsea were very, very poor, but Nicholas Jackson, I mean...
I'm sorry, Nico Jackson. You ain't for real.
I feel, he's like, at what point do we start to feel bad? It's like, the criticism is obviously fair. He had that 1v1 with Raya and decides to go near post for some reason, and then just... it goes outside of the net.
Have so the entire far post.
The entire far post. Open. And it's like, why not go to the larger part that you have that is more open?
He's trying to play chess when they're like, bro, we're asking you to play checkers, bro. You really ain't got to be
this
doing all
this is Connect
that.
Four. Yeah, yeah. What are you doing?
Fam, too much strategy is involved. You're playing Hungry Hungry Hippo. Hit the paddle. Just hit the goddamn paddle. Just
really, really hard and fast.
Please. That's all I'm asking you to do.
It works. It doesn't seem like it might work, but it works. It's a good strategy.
Stop slamming the paddle with your forehead. That's got to hurt.
It looks bad when... this man just a couple days ago was fighting with his teammates to take a penalty.
Bro, I actually think that's what broke him as a human being. now that I think about it, the man hasn't been able to get a shot on target since.
He's like, bro, I deserve it. I'm a baller, bro. Yeah. Give me the rock.
Yo, the only way I can score is if it's put on the spot. And I'm not asked to do too much.
It's genuinely embarrassing, bro. We can't score goals. And like that, but this has been like a multi-year thing now with Chelsea where it's just they create some chances. The defense, I mean, they were obviously terrible against Arsenal, but the defense overall this season hasn't been the worst. We cannot find the back of the net no matter what. And I don't understand why. It's different players. We've had Lukaku.
You also just humiliated Everton the other day, 6-0. So it's not.
Again, Cole Palmer FC. Cole Palmer humiliated
Cole Palmer
Everton
is doing great.
6-0.
Yeah, yeah.
Chelsea didn't really do
and
that.
We got to talk about what that did to Everton that match. Because I feel like your juju was passed.
Yeah, seriously.
in the sixth goal. It's like, the picture of all the world leaders at the time putting the hand on the
on
orb.
The orb. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's what happened when the ball was picked out of the net for the sixth goal. It was a passing of the torch. But when I look at this team, I think I can't imagine how anyone on that back line got a... five score higher than five.
Atrocious.
That was
Badiashile.
I don't think Badiashile played that much better than Cucurella. You know what I mean? I mean, this was just bad. Di Sassi, I think, had some moments, but overall, I think Caicedo at one moment he's like on the right half space around the box, and he sends a horrific cross. And even I'm like, well, he doesn't want to be up there.
No,
how did he end up there? You know? Yeah. What this tells you, and you mentioned all the players, Lukaku and whatnot. It feels to me like since, Fernando Torres, Chelsea hasn't had Diego Costa. Diego Costa. Okay, fair.
But you're right. Apart from him, we've had no one.
No striker that's played to the level that expected of them until Cole Palmer.
Yeah.
And to sit there and say, we're not Cole Palmer FC. Bro, you're known as a club, not you, Pochettino. You're known for ruining strikers. And now you got one. And you yourself want to ruin this man? It makes no sense.
Cole Palmer's not a he's not a striker. He's not a midfielder.
He's their goal scorer.
He's their goal scorer.
For this season.
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels
I think he's still in the lead
he was tied for the leading.
I can't hold the player's effort in this game, especially in that second half. I don't exactly know what happened. I think the issues with Chelsea, we've been talking about them essentially since Todd Boehly took over the team. And it really does feel like the issues are much more systemic and much more top down. The players that they have on the pitch. Nico Jackson, with all due respect to him, I don't know where he came from. I don't know what the exact
Villarreal.
But
he was last year. This was the same thing that people said about him last year. He doesn't score enough goals. He makes great runs. He draws defenders to the wrong place. But he only had, I think it was like 4 or 5 goals through the first like 28 games of the season. And he scored a bunch at the end. And his tally ended up being like 15. So it didn't look so bad.
Right.
But it's just like he's not a proficient, like a prolific goal scorer.
No.
And that's exactly what Chelsea needs.
Yeah. Yeah. They look like a team with not, maybe it is on Pochettino. Maybe it is.
All of their issues are final third. There's other issues.
The midfield isn't strong.
I don't know. But they get the ball forward.
Yeah, we do.
They can get to the box.
Yeah.
And they're like, what's that there? They're like, hey, did you know this is what a basketball is? They're just like, stop talking about that.
Maybe it's also the injuries, you know, not having Chilwell. I mean, Chilwell played in the game late, but he's
and
not
here. Nkunku is the big one that we've been missing almost
exactly.
The
and then
biggest is Reese,
am I forgetting his name?
No, I mean.
Reese, yeah.
Reese, yeah, but like, this, I think, on like, I don't get me wrong, it hurts me to say I love Reese James. Thank you. I don't think many Chelsea fans would be sad to see him go.
He just
doesn't play.
He's injured. If he wasn't injury prone, he'd be incredible.
Yeah,
he's huge, and he's also really good at advancing the ball beyond. He's good at stopping, and he's good at advancing the ball forward.
He's great
at crossing. Which gives space to your midfielder, something that Enzo desperately needs.
And Enzo just announced that he's getting, I guess, a season-ending surgery because of a herniated disc. It sounds like he's been playing with an injury for all this time. And I think it sort of shows because the Chelsea midfield is getting eaten alive most of the time. So I didn't think Everton should have lost 6-0 to Chelsea, and definitely Chelsea should not be losing 5-0 to Arsenal. There was just something in
that seems a bit more realistic than the Everton Chelsea result.
I think Chelsea and Everton are closer together than Chelsea and Arsenal are closer together.
Yeah.
I also think Everton is defensively stout enough
to not get mollywopped 6-0.
Right.
And I think Arsenal have had issues scoring goals as of late, so you wouldn't have expected them to go and just absolutely buy.
The second Havertz goal, the one that hit the post and went in, which is a great goal, and there was a little bit of like, all the defenders and even Petrovic were like frozen of like, we don't know what foot he's going to hit with.
Yeah.
We don't know when he's going to actually stop the ball.
Right. You don't even know if he's going to get a shot on target. He is. He honestly is that erratic sometimes.
Yeah, but this is the game that it sort of felt like, you know, even though Havertz has had a fairly decent season, he's had some
11 goals?
Some bad misses this year.
Click on his name. I think he's got 11 goals now. I mean, that's huge. And this is his former club. If you click player profile, it'll pop up. This is his former club.
Yeah, 11 goals this season. Yeah,
he celebrated on Chelsea.
Yeah, yeah.
The knee slide.
So there was no love lost. It was just
definitely not.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm happy to be out of there.
Yeah. Don't even remember her, bro. I don't know what my life was like.
But this felt like one of those games where he's rebranding. He's changing.
He downloaded the upgrade.
And Arsenal fans, they're just like, nah, like, yo, I always mess with Kai Havertz since day one, bro.
We never questioned it.
Because even when he got signed, people were like, oh, I don't know, why are we bringing him?
You will say, I don't know if you remember, I've been high on him from the beginning.
Okay.
I was all about it. I do think that the way if you notice where on the chart where he sort of plays, left back, a little crazy, but I know he does that for the national team. Center midfield is what I think he was brought in for.
But he's been playing as a striker, really, for
I think even
Arsenal.
Mikel Arteta was surprised when they saw how good he was up top, because the one thing about him is since he does like to just sort of walk into open space, which mm-hmm. dangerous if it's a dog. You know, good if it's a midfielder / forward. If you like to sort of walk into open spaces, what he's done is he's opened up everyone else. In particular, Martin Odegaard. Martin Odegaard has the most passes or shot creations mm-hmm. in the league by a long shot. This dude is absolutely just like every time that Havertz is playing and Havertz and Odegaard sort of does that move he does where he gets the ball from whoever's on the wing and probably being double teamed if it's Saka or if in that moment maybe, you know, Ben White ran up and he sort of slides over. He's like, oh, I could shoot. But then again, all of a sudden, here comes Havertz making a slight movement that draws the defender out.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. He's very subtle.
He is so subtle, and that's why it upsets me sometimes in the group chats that I'm in where they're like, oh, he doesn't get the stats of someone who's that. And again, I'm like, bro, you're thinking of Football Manager. Yeah. You're not thinking of the game. But the guy opens up the space so other people can get stats, and that is worth so much.
I think it does. I just think the problem with Kai Havertz, and especially at the end of his time with Chelsea, is because he like is just kind of wandering around. It looks effortless. And so when he does something amazing and it looks effortless, you're like, whoa, this kid's incredible. But when he's not performing well and it looks like he's not even trying, that really frustrates fans, players,
but that's
coaches.
The stuff that...
But even when he's trying really hard, he also looks like he's not really trying.
No, that's what I'm saying.
I mean?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
He also looks like he forgot where he was.
Right.
Oh, I'm in the middle of the game. That's kind of the look on his face.
Yeah, he's a little bit like almost indifferent to
and
playing.
I'm not comparing the players, but remember they would say the same thing about Ozil. They're like, bro, he's not even trying. He's not running.
Yeah.
Messi, he's not even running. But when the play is needed, you're like, oh, they happen to be standing in the right spot.
Or send the perfect pass, you know, whatever.
Or, you know, when it goes bad, you're just like, I told you he wasn't even running because, especially in England, they got to see you put in an effort.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, if you're not putting in a
put
shift.
Put in a shift.
Yes. If you're not putting in a shift, those fans will freak out.
So, a huge win that now puts, you know.
What's the goal differential at?
Oh, I mean...
For Arsenal?
Arsenal, it is...
Because that is a point.
I'll put up the table in a second, but the...
Yeah. You can just click table.
Yeah. The
Plus 56.
Sheesh!
They have a better goal differential than City by 12 right now.
Yeah, so they're doing all right when it comes to scoring goals, which is also... They've just scored so many goals, and it's just wild that, you know, City has two games in hand and still has a very strong opportunity to still win the title.
You know what? I mean, but we're 77 points. Arsenal is 77 points. Manchester City at 73, so that's a gap of four with two matches. I honestly believe I treat it as we're still in second. Like, you know how Luton, their table doesn't have the points deductions on it because they're like, I'm not even focusing on that.
Yeah.
The way I look at it is we're still in second because of those games in hand.
Got it.
You can't look at it and say, especially with the North London Derby coming up on Sunday, you can't look at that and say it's ours. No, what you can say, though, is that City... They have a chance to potentially drop points.
Yeah, they are, and
someone in my group chat put, they're going to drop points at least one. And the way this man was roasted, because there's no way to just drop a point.
I've seen. I think they were on some game during the commentary when like Arsenal, Liverpool, and City all played on the same day. They were like, "You want to play first. That's out of in any center, you want to be the one sort of leading and putting the pressure on the other team. So now there's a little bit of pressure on City to win these games. They're not a given that they're going to win the games, even though
they're going to play Brighton, which they've only lost twice at home this season.
Right? You know, people. I know City is City, but they have, you know, slipped up from time to time, especially early on this season.
It's tough to feel confident in any way, shape, or form because they won a treble last season. And you're like, that kind of battle tested.
So the other team that is in the title race, Liverpool.
Was.
Did you hear the chant after the game? Yeah. It said, you lost the league at Goodison Park.
Oh, yeah.
You lost the league at Goodison Park. So shout out to Everton Football Club for winning. For defeating Liverpool at Goodison Park for the first time in 14 years.
Do you know who scored the last time they won?
Yes.
Mikel Arteta.
Oh, wait, no. Oh, no. The last time they won at Anfield.
No. This was the last time they beat Liverpool at Goodison Park. Tim Cahill And McKellar comes in at 2-0.
That was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
I just referenced a pundit and a manager, a now not so young
the
manager.
The last time Everton defeated Liverpool was during the COVID lockdown when there were no fans. And the scores in that game were, of course, Richarlison and, you guessed it, Gylfi Sigurdsson. all right. Anyway, but no, a huge...
I wonder if he hung out with Diddy.
We gotta celebrate, bro.
Okay. No, this victory.
Not Gylfi.
You need to add a pause or something in that. A little hezzy in there.
Shout out to Toffee TV for this shirt. I'm rocking the Evertonia shirt. Love to see it. But no, what a tremendous victory. I mean, there's a lot of people to, I think, that can be celebrated in this game. I think Sean Dyche played the game perfectly. Okay.
Can I tell you the moment where Sean Dyche changed Everton's season?
I think I know what you're going to say.
There was a 6-0 loss.
Yes.
Horrific. Next match, who did you guys play? Who did
Burnley.
Everton? Okay, Burnley, you had a big win there.
Yeah, 2-0. 1-0, 2-0, something like that.
There was a difference. There was a difference on the sideline. And you know what it was? Sean Dyche wearing a tracksuit.
Yes. Well, it's not even a tracksuit. He's wearing the
training track.
The training top.
Yeah, but he's wearing like workout pants. It looks like a tracksuit.
Yeah.
He's not wearing the angry insurance salesman suit. You know, he's relaxed.
Right.
About as relaxed as you can look.
I was going to say, Sean Dyche doesn't look relaxed.
He never looks relaxed, but he's
a man who shaves his head and is not bald. So there's something. Sean Dyche can grow hair.
No way.
There's no way this man grows hair.
Look at his hair. He has a hairline. We're looking at Sean Dyche. That's a full-haired man.
We need to do full psychoanalysis on this man.
Let's, okay.
Yeah, he's got the bald spot in the back.
No, bro. I don't think so.
Maybe it's just thin, and that's why he shaves it.
Possibly.
That doesn't look that thin.
That's not a bald man.
No, I know. I'm looking at a picture.
He's a self-balding man.
It's the Jim Norton. Jim Norton, also a guy who shaves his head.
Terrible hairline, though.
Not bald.
Terrible hairline.
He has very, very thin hair. So it looks like he's a sick kid when he lets his hair grow out.
What does he look like? A muscle man with the shaved head? The guy looks like a sick kid.
Just
24/7.
Sean Dyche is, when you're optionally bald, it says something about you. It's not a hairstyle, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's next level commitment. He's saying, I don't want the 17 seconds it takes me to do my hair.
There was some player who said that that grew a beautiful head of hair. I must have seen it on Ben Foster's podcast or something. He was like, I shaved my head to intimidate the opponent.
Oh, that's the guy from Celtic.
Okay.
Because they were shocked because he had a shaved head his whole career. They were shocked when he showed up and he had a full head of hair.
Right.
And he's like, I've always had hair.
It's like seeing Robbie Keane now. Not Robbie Keane, Roy Keane.
Yeah.
Roy Keane is just beautiful also hair. But when you watch him play, man, looked like a little scary.
But even in this photo that we had that you pulled up with him with hair, which again has completely confused me, he's wearing a shirt and tie. He changed that.
He did.
Over the last two matches. And what were the results of the last two matches?
Victories.
Two victories. Two clean sheets.
Oh, I got to correct
that. You said Burnley.
Burnley.
It was Nottingham.
It was Nottingham. But the game previous to the Chelsea loss was against Burnley.
Yeah. Apologies. But he was like, he specifically said he needed to make a change.
Yeah.
And the players have said they noticed the difference when he showed up in a tracksuit. They were like, it galvanized the team. I'm paraphrasing. But they knew something was going on.
Yeah.
And look at how the season has changed.
It's quite stark.
He saved Everton from their first ever relegation.
We're not there just yet, but we're pretty close, right? Everton are four games left in the Premier League season. They're sitting on 33 points after already having been deducted 8 points, which is, again, given these performances, Everton doesn't look as bad of a season as it sort of feels.
You're 8 points ahead of Luton in 18th.
Yes,
which is the drop zone.
Right.
So you would have to assume, unless the players are like, oh, we good now, we don't have to try anymore, that they're going to be able to survive. Who are the next remaining matches?
The next matches
for Everton.
Yeah. We'll look those up right now. What are the next ones?
Next up, Brentford. Luton, Sheffield, and Arsenal. So those are three massive matches in a row. Brentford,
Sheffield should be, that should be a win. I mean, Sheffield are going to be relegated probably by the next game if they're not already. But Everton, great. I want to talk about this game in particular and just Liverpool basically getting their title chances thrown out the
embarrassed.
Window.
Embarrassed.
I don't know if it's embarrassing.
It is. It is embarrassing because you're the team that comes back after the 75th minute and you couldn't find any other gear.
This was a game where I'm praising Sean Dyche. I thought he tactically handled it well. I thought the Jordan Pickford.
Same thing they always do.
Well, that's the thing. Even Jurgen Klopp, after the game, he was like, especially after the first goal, they're like, we knew what Everton was going to do. We knew how they were going to play. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't figure it out. And it took a lot of, like, obviously the defending was remarkable. Jordan Pickford. I mean, we're talking about Nico Jackson, but Darwin Nunez, another guy.
Terrible.
Had unbelievable opportunities.
Don't let Virgil van Dijk off the hook, though, because he couldn't get his head on anything, bro.
But
guys were winning all the aerial battles.
In the game that Everton, especially in the first, I think, six or seven set pieces that they were getting to every first ball. Mm-hmm. And the goals that's what led to the goals. It was just, but Jared Branthwaite.
He's never struck a ball at a goal in his life. This man had no clue.
Wait, did he get credit for that goal? Because
He did. Okay. Because
Dominic Calvert-Lewin tried.
Well, the way Branthwaite went over to celebrate, I was like, dude, you saw that didn't go in, right? And he was just like, oh.
But it crossed the line just before
Dominic Calvert-Lewin literally threw his entire body and life.
He risked the rest of his career.
He threw his soul at that ball. He's like, this has to go in.
Yo, free me, bro. I want that. Stat.
Okay, my man was gonna throw every limb at it. Hey, he would have swung his dick if he could, bro.
I'm surprised he didn't push the keeper into it.
This ball is going in no matter what. And this was I thought Jaron Branthwaite in this game in particular is making a case for, you know, I think I said this the other day. I'm like, I don't think Jaron Branthwaite will be at Everton very long because eventually they're gonna sell him and they need the money and they need the profit. But he is arguably getting to, it sounds a little crazy, but fighting for kind of one of the best English center backs in the country.
The only reason I might disagree is he looked really bad when given the opportunity. Not really bad, but he didn't look up to the level of expected when he got the opportunity with England.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're talking about simply in the league, absolutely incredible.
He's looking great.
And he looks like he has a future. Obviously, there's a little bit of... It's tough to tell how good of a center back you are when you're on the back foot so often,
right?
Like the way that Sean Dyche wants to
play. I would disagree with that. I would say it is best to see how good of a center back you are when you are on the back foot that often and you have to defend. It's why Jordan Pickford is the number one for England, because he plays on a team where he is constantly getting pelted with shots.
Here's the problem, though. Like, can you trust Jordan Pickford on the national team when you know they're going to have the majority of possession and they're going to be up high and you kind of have to sit and wait for a large majority of the match and then be able to spring into attack? And if you're Jordan Branthwaite, can you hug that halfway line?
Sure.
Can you do those things that's not really being asked of you?
I think
you
he can.
Everton.
I think, he's great on the ball. He's good with both feet. And the dude's a unit.
Yeah, big boy.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy.
I held his own, you know, fighting for, in set pieces against Virgil van Dijk, against Konate.
And I actually think that, I don't want to call it a failed debut or a failed opportunity with the national team, but not the best game you could have asked for. That some people were suggesting maybe he's out of the conversation of the Euros.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure he was ever in it, but the opportunity to show up and show off, he really didn't take that. I actually think that's made him better. I think that's made him re-sort of focus.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just guessing.
Just a great game, man. Solid performance and defensive
performance
from Everton. Yeah.
Let's say Everton is saved. Do you want Sean Dyche back as your manager next year?
I think a first derby win at home in 14 years.
But you saw the game.
Bro, bring Sean Dyche to Chelsea. What are we doing here?
Is it long term? Probably not. But this is what I'll say. I think the...
If you didn't have the points deduction, where would you be on the table?
Like 14th or 15th, something like that.
Still not great.
Not great, but still, I mean, for a team with all the financial issues and mismanagement that Everton have had
three
been
managers
through,
ago, I think it was three managers ago. Who was your manager?
Three managers ago,
which might have been 4 weeks ago.
Was it the who's the manager at Fulham?
Marco Silva.
Was it Silva?
No, or was it Carlo?
I think it's Carlo Ancelotti.
3 ago? Yeah, maybe.
I think it's Carlo Ancelotti.
List of Everton managers.
Yo, think about that.
Yeah,
Carlo Ancelotti.
The guy remember James Rodriguez played for our club, bro?
Yeah. What a wild time. You really came in at a really cursed moment.
All right, if you don't count Big Dunk, then Carlo was 3 ago.
Yeah, he was a caretaker. Yeah. So think about where you were. No disrespect to Sean Dyche, but I think we would all agree it's kind of it's more of a League One style of game because I think even Championship has moved
yeah,
on.
Yeah, Ligue 1. Yeah, he's a well-known. I love the French tactics.
Would love to see Sean Dyche ordering food in Nantes. I would love.
I love it. Yeah.
I'd pay to be there. I would pay to be
I watch on BN Sports all 100%, the time. Yeah, dude. It's a great league.
Oh, my God. When Luis Enrique goes back to Barca in 2 years, PSG will bring in Sean Dyche.
Okay. He's a perfect fit.
Parlez-vous, français.
Bro, my man is fluent.
Yeah. No one says romance language like the voice of Sean Dyche.
So I think the look it is the style of this is what he has brought. He has brought a sense of
Everton wanted to be thick. Exactly. Yeah. You wanted stability. You wanted to settle. You got that now. If you survive, you can't open the new stadium with a 4-4-2 low block. Beto and Dominic Calvert-Lewin running like Bambis.
I think once Everton sort out their financial issues, the new stadium, maybe new owners. New investment and
with new owners, usually
with the
come
players
to
that Everton has right now, I say Sean Dyche, you keep him for if this is going to be the situation where you can't really bring in. We're still fielding Andre Gomez out there, bro.
Yeah, he's
out there. His FIFA card has like 12 pace, bro.
and he's
still doing what he has to do. But we cannot replace players. There is no money. So if this is going to be the situation, then Sean Dyche has to be the manager. That is the feeling. There is at least some stability, some sense of like, okay, the players believe it's to go from that 6-0 loss.
He certainly got them playing. Yeah, he got them playing.
To go from that 6-0 loss to a win like this is tremendous.
Two clean sheets in a row.
That's huge. So the players have some sense of belief. And I loved even the decisions of like sitting Amadou Onana, right? He's like been one of the better players for Everton, but there are some times he just doesn't fit. He doesn't maybe make the right decision. Defensively, he can end up coming in this game, but there's something to look. Let's find the right sort of. Even Jack Harrison getting benched for like 3-4 games because he wasn't doing that well. And even in this game, he got an 8.5 rating on FotMob. But Jack Harrison, who we love and adore, he's the absolute homie. But there's something even to his game that concerns me within Everton, where it's like he's great on 1v1, but he's losing the ball way too much. It's almost like he's not getting the help he needs for the type of player he is on that side.
Well, I mean, he just came from Leeds where it was, you know, pass the ball to each other and a murder ball and everyone has it and it's somewhat direct, but it's a ton of pressing to come to this where it's fully direct. There's no one coming to your aid.
Yeah.
You basically have to pass it into spaces you hope a player can get to.
Yeah.
It's a very different style and I think his instinct isn't for that.
Yeah. So,
there's no bad mouthing, Jack.
No, it's not even it's not like he got an 8.5 rating. He didn't play poorly.
No, he crushed it.
It was just the there were just many times where he has two or three defenders on him and there's nobody really there to help him like give him a passing option because they're so focused on defending. So it's also defensively.
So more of this.
Defensively, like, he does the job that he needs to do. So I give him credit for that. But it's just there's certain things within the team where just like you see the heart there. That's the thing that makes me most proud. It's like they're playing for the badge. They're playing for those fans. And just getting this result in this moment is just
huge.
Nobody expected it.
No.
Not a one. So
you ruined Klopp's goodbye.
Okay. So that's a nice little send-off for Jurgen Klopp.
What was the comedian group chat?
Ecstatic. They couldn't believe it. Somebody said, well, am I dreaming? Is this what dreams feel like? Somebody literally said that. So shouts to the blue in Merseyside, because, you know, you saw it yourself. I dealt with a lot of stick being in Liverpool and being an Everton fan.
Even just from other Everton fans.
Yeah, yeah. But this was definitely a proud moment for the Toffees. All right. Let's get to our convo with Sean Francis. Again, yes. Absolute homie. And we're going to be talking a lot of MLS, a lot of American soccer with him, because he's been around for a bit. So here goes. Here's our convo with Sean Francis.
The illustrious guests just continued to come on this show.
That's it, bro. This is someone, again, we mentioned that up top, but mm-hmm. someone it feels criminal that he hasn't been on the show yet. And finally,
somebody in American soccer until this person knows who you are.
If you haven't been knighted,
and after that, you still ain't somebody. You gotta work a little bit harder. But that's the beginning, though.
You stepped in the door. Toe in.
Now you kind of know.
Because, for real, this is someone when we started out in 2015.
When we started out.
When we someone we looked to of like, yo, who's mm-hmm. done something even close to what we're doing.
And while the show that predated ours is a show called The Offside Rules. I hope I said that correctly. The Offside Rule?
You did.
Okay. and while it may not have begat, it was a direct correlation. The Venn diagram had a lot of in the middle. And in the middle is this episode, which has taken too long to do. Ladies and gentlemen, he's done everything in this game. He knows all the deep, dirty secrets, but he's not going to say it on the show. But before we recorded, we got some stories. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only Sean Francis, everybody.
Sean, what's up, brother?
Thank you for the recording claps. Yeah.
Our studio audience, no, Joel, went to the bathroom at the same time.
All 17 of them.
I love how every time they hit the button, they clap on in unison the exact same way every single time.
But then it trails off, so you hear more of them, which is great. My first question to you is, to see what we're doing, and think back to your first episode of The Offsides Rule, tell me about what that setup was like. What was the world like? What year is it? Where is the league at the moment? Where is Messi at the moment? What's going on? Put everything in perspective for the audience.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're referencing The Offsides Rules podcast,
yes,
you got to back it up, because you got to go to the blog first, right?
Ooh. A blog, bro. For Gen Z listening, that is...
These were newspapers.
Yeah. It's short for weblog, right?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Boomers right now are just getting their ears itchy.
Okay.
Basically, it was like having your own diary or journal on a website.
A live journal.
Yeah, live journal.
Which I hear is coming back.
I heard Tumblr's going to come back.
Tumblr is coming back.
All right.
And that's crazy. Wild. That's
wild. And what year was this? So when you're...
Yeah, I'll bring... Yeah, the year...
Whoo, the blog.
When we started the blog, man, I think that was probably around 2006.
Prime American soccer.
Prime. Oh, the big soccer era.
Yo, the jerseys were big and baggy.
Yeah. Armpit from the jersey was so far away from your actual armpit. Now they're too close.
The baggy era.
Yeah.
Baggy era.
But you said big soccer. That's not a euphemism.
No.
There was a website called Big Soccer, which was, imagine you took the toxicity of Reddit and the anger of a pub outside of, I don't know, an Everton football match.
And you married put it, that together. Forget, with the need to be right that American soccer Twitter possesses.
Yes.
Right.
You put all those three things in the blender.
That was Big Soccer.
An unholy union, man. It was like, but it was weird because Big Soccer was... In some ways, that was the lifeblood.
It was the most important
of soccer
thing.
In America. That's how you knew what was going
on. It was the Financial Times, if you will.
Yeah. Oh, it was the paper of record.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. It was the absolute paper of record. And there's so many people that to this day I don't know them by their government names, but I know them by their big soccer handle.
Yo, there's Dirty Pete 48.
straight up.
That's my boy. The guy's now a pastor. You know, it's like, yo, chill with the Dirty Pete. Yo, I changed my life, man.
Not in front of my kids, bro.
My wife, no. She don't know my past. Being the rowdiest Colorado Rapids supporter.
Oh, well, that's an achievement.
There's usually one or two.
We're looking at the website, Big Side.
Didn't look like this.
It didn't look like this.
No,
it's a little bit more cleaner.
There was a lot of web 2.0 graphics back then.
Right. And they were famous for just not liking anyone or anything. This was like
absolutely.
This is a big, I remember the Big Soccer. You had to pay for it at one point, so I never, I could never really go into
it. Yeah, there was a point where it was free, though, and it was, again, man, it was crucial. It was very necessary. But out of this world, you know, blogs came a thing. Everybody started writing their own blogs. And, like, a lot of people now who are, like, you know, big dogs in American soccer journalism, people like Ivis Glarsip, that, like, Soccer by Ives was, that blog was, like, necessary reading. I checked that thing 5 times a day to find out, you know, what the latest transfer rumor was, what the whatever was. But
and he used to be first on, like, you everything. Know, league news.
And this is also before Twitter was really became a thing in 2008, 9. That's when really people started getting on. So this is what's a necessary. This is how you exchange information, especially about soccer. You didn't have a platform where you could go to and share stories and stuff like that.
Beforehand. And there was no Golazo Network. There was nowhere to watch any news about soccer.
There was nothing. There was like Fox Soccer Channel.
Dude, I remember the Fox Soccer Network.
Fox Soccer Network.
What was it? Football phone-in? Remember that?
Fox Football phone-in.
Yo.
Yeah.
People were so angry going, hey, this is James from Kalamazoo. What's your favorite club? I hate you. Goodbye. That was a show on TV.
I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah. First time, last time. First time I'm calling, last time I'm calling. Yeah. What was the, it was Eric Winalda and who was the other guy? Do you remember?
We met the, it was the Irish guy, right? Or
was it? I can't remember.
We met. I mean, there were so many guys that, you know, they're still around today that were all part of that Fox Soccer Channel thing. Kyle Martino had a talk show for a short-lived talk show.
Oh, my God.
Max Bredos was there. Christian Sullivan. I mean, so many of the guys that are still on the air now were there. It was a very, Rob Stone.
Yeah, Rob Stone. Yeah. Like, if you go back and watch it, it feels so like, you know, like public access. It's crazy.
But that was it. Like that was what you could get. Podcasts weren't really a thing.
Yeah.
Like I said, Twitter wasn't really a thing yet. So it was
so
just
you
like,
started as a blog.
Yeah.
Started and you this called blog. It the Offside Rules. And was your goal to be funny? Because that's the one thing I remember about you guys is two things. When we started the show, I was like, we want to be a little bit more hood than the average show. Like they don't really talk about the culture like we know it.
Yeah.
Like our side of the tracks, if you will. And also no one's even trying to be funny. And if they are, they're not hitting that.
No, they weren't.
Everyone's, but you guys had that little bit of irreverency.
Yeah, everybody was trying to be a reporter, right? And some people, if you were Ives or Grant Wall or Stephen Goff, you were a proper reporter, and that's what you did. But there were a lot of guys who were like me in their basement blogging, writing these things that I want to be a reporter. And that's cool, whatever. My thing was like, what's the white space? What are people not doing?
Yes.
And if you looked at that blog era, the most popular blogs out there were things like TMZ and Perez Hilton, right? There was no one doing that. Everyone would talk about what the latest transfer rumors, though I was talking about how ridiculous Beckham's latest haircut was.
Right.
So I just ran straight into that white space.
Yeah.
And it worked because it was
the
like
the whole thing was a white space when we got
there. Yeah, I mean, I just had this conversation the other day.
You
fam.
And Kevin represented a very much of a different.
Yo.
And shouts to Ives as well.
Yeah, yeah. But like Kevin and I, we joke about it because like, we used to go to games, and it was like we were the only black people that were on the field. There really wasn't a lot of brothers around. No, there were a lot of brothers around, and like I said this recently to someone at NMLS. You know, they've made a lot of improvements, a lot of efforts with their DEI initiative and stuff. And like I go in the office now, and again, it used to be me, Ollie Curtis, and one other person.
Yeah.
That was it. And like I walk in there now, and I'm like, oh, what's up? A lot of head nods. Like, all right, I see you playing.
Yeah,
yeah.
I must be in the wrong place.
Oh, you're not on the right floor. You got on the wrong floor, man. But Kevin and I, and shout out to Kevin Brown. Kevin Brown is like a phantom now in American soccer.
Yeah, where is he, bro?
Kevin Moore, he's back in it. He went to Miami for years.
That's right.
I want to say
the football gods?
Yeah, the football gods. Yeah, Marini, shout out Marini. Soccer gods.
Soccer gods.
Shout out Kevin Brown and Maridi Marenghi.
Yeah.
The soccer gods. But they were on, I can't
Fusion?
Remember. Fusion, thank you.
Fusion
remember that?
Yeah.
Before it became.
Giannis Papas
had the
morning
show.
Yeah, yeah.
Ariel Castillo
was also on
Yeah, that's where
there.
She
Bro,
got Levitard. Her roots.
Levitard
yeah.
was on Fusion for a long time.
What?
Okay.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Look at the connection.
Bro,
yeah.
Who knew?
But yeah, Kevin went down there to Miami and kind of did
bro,
that.
Bro, he disappeared after that.
Yeah, you know what, man? Kevin got, and you know, I won't judge him.
Yeah, of course.
A little disillusioned with American soccer.
Ooh,
got a little disillusioned.
Damn, he's
a little bit big soccer.
I think he's the only one, bro.
Yeah.
We all are on board with everything.
He's up there. You'll see him at Gotham games. Go to Gotham game. You'll find him at a Gotham game. You won't find him at Red Bull games anymore, but you'll find him at Gotham games.
Bro, okay. We need to come on. World Cup's about to be here. We need to have him on the show just to go full circle.
Get the whole gang back together.
Yeah. Why not?
Always thought he hated us when we started.
No, God, no. He's just Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin's one of those dudes like, kind of like me, but in a different way. But Kevin was born 35 years old.
Yeah,
he's like a curmudgeon.
I totally see that.
Like, he's a contrarian, but he's a beautiful contrarian. Yeah. He's like one of those smartest people, most well-read people you'll know. But he always gives it with a little bit of Jersey attitude, a little chip on his shoulder.
To give you the difference between Kevin, I don't think you've ever met Kevin Brown.
Maybe early on when we started. Maybe.
I think we might have met him briefly at the first NYCFC match, because I think he was doing something for Fusion, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. But when I first met you, I'm like, oh my God, I'm Alexis from the Coolers. You go, no, I know who you are. Yo, show seems fun, man. And we had a good conversation. When I met Kevin, I'm like, yo, you probably don't know who I am. I'm Alexis from the Cooligans. No, I know who you are. And then he walked away. and that kind of gives you a good
idea. That is him 1,000%.
It gives you a good idea of the difference between the two of you and why maybe we fostered a better relationship.
With that. I've seen what I needed to see.
Yeah. Oh, I love that guy.
I have all the information I need. I'm good. I don't think this is going to change my opinion.
Hilarious. Oh, well, it's fascinating to hear that start. But then you ended up working at MLS at some point.
Yeah, like that lead.
So I mean, for us, we always, we've taken like meetings at MLS, and we were trying to figure out like, well, what's going to be, who are we in this space? Are we going to be working for a league? Are we working for a club or something?
Who
like
are
that?
We in this space? We were like, who's going to give us money?
Who's got a check for me?
Yes. I mean, who's going to let me pay rent?
That's the ultimate question. If you were creating soccer content in America, it's like, can someone pay me? Because there seems to be this weird thing. I'm sure you guys have run into that where it's like, oh, you guys like soccer. You should work for free.
Yeah.
It's like,
exposure.
Exposure. Yeah. No, if exposure was money, son.
Dude, this goes back to like 2016, maybe 2017-ish. I saw you and this was maybe when we were drinking Wayne Gretzky's whiskey. And we finished the bottle, might I add.
We did.
At one point, a couple sips in, Sean looks at me and goes, so how's the show going? You guys making money yet? I was just like, this is perfect. And you didn't say it as, are you guys good enough to make money? You understood the fight we were trying to fight. This is it. Oh, my God.
There it is. Wayne Gretzky's.
Oh, my God.
Number 99.
Yes.
Ooh, this is the red
cast. This was in Toronto. And you pulled
up. This 2014, 15?
No. We started 2015. So it was supposed to be 2017, 2018.
Okay. Yeah, 17, I think.
And you were like, oh, what are you doing afterwards? I was like, oh, I don't know. He's like, you like whiskey? I said, yeah, I love it. Yo, come back to the room. Bunch of us are going to be hanging out.
Yes, now I remember this.
Yes. I got a suite for no reason.
Yeah. Yes.
I got a suite for no reason.
For no reason.
No reason
at all.
I'm
like, yo, this kid balling, bro. Me and you are like in an Airbnb that has like an air mattress that we're sharing. And you got a suite.
we made
our cameraman sleep on a couch. We couldn't afford anything. That's right. Zito.
Ariel was there.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Shout out Zito Badu. Shout out Ariel Castillo.
Yo, I got this special bottle of whiskey. We're popping it and drinking it tonight. Perfect. He pulls out the bag. I forgot. We gave it a nickname. Like, we gave it the two hockey sticks or something. It was like a nickname. And I'm like, where the hell did he find Wayne Gretzky? Well, we're in Canada. This makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you can find a Wayne Gretzky anything in Canada. Yeah, right? I mean, he's licensed himself to toilet paper, to Dixie Cups. Sure. There's probably a Wayne Gretzky number 99 microphone. I don't know.
Get that money, bro.
Yeah.
But the whiskey's high.
So the transition from just how did you get from doing this blog and doing this podcast to then working at MLS? Like, how was that? How were the interviews? Were they even like open to what you were like your experience or skill in the space?
Yeah. It was interesting, man, because I was in the music industry. So I had worked at a bunch of, even going back to like college, I had interned at all these labels. I was a DJ.
Music, soccer. Yeah. Damn, you didn't want to make any money, huh?
No, I know. I wanted to have a good time.
He's like, I owned a couple of Blockbusters.
It's going to hit, honey. Yeah. It's going to hit.
It's cyclical.
Ignore this Netflix garbage.
Nah, bro. Government's going to shut it down, dude.
It was the TikTok of its day.
Yeah,
the government's
going to
shut it down. Yeah. But yeah, I'd done some consulting work for MLS, and then I got laid off at MTV because that's what Viacom does very regularly. And I was coming into the city for an interview with Red Bull. Not Red Bull in New York, but Red Bull, the drink.
Yeah.
Train pulls into, or I get on the platform at 42nd Street to head downtown. Train pulls up, door opens, and it's my buddy Chris Schlosser, who's been at MLS forever. And he looks at me, and I just go, he doesn't say hello. He looks at me and goes, "Hey, man, I heard you're not working. We should talk." And I'm like, "Well, hi, Chris. How are you? Why you got to go there?" He's like, no, I didn't mean like that, but we got this new project. I was like, okay, cool. I come, talk to him. He's like, "We're bringing the website in-house. We're going to start this new website." Da-da-da, cool. He's like, "You should meet Don." And I'm like, "The commissioner? Why?" Yeah. He's like, "Oh, he reads your blog." I'm like, "He doesn't read my blog." He's like, "Oh, no, dude, he reads your blog. He brings it up in meetings." And at that point, I was like, that's crazy, because I didn't know if, like, my mom would even read my blog. You know what I mean? So I go and I meet Don Garber, and I meet Mark Abbott, and we just talk about all the stuff, all the things they want to do. And at the time, the league was, you know, they're really trying to branch out and do something different. Because believe it or not, in the early days, they didn't run their own website fully. It was run by a company called Sports on Earth, which is owned by Major League Baseball. So think about that. At its core, you've got Pepsi running Coke's website, right?
Yeah.
There's only some, it's weird, right? It's weird. So they were
it's down again. I don't know why.
So brought it in house, and that was part of the whole thing. So we just wanted to make it more personality driven, more you know, just really reflective of like what American soccer culture was. And so we brought in, you know, myself, Simon Borg, Nick Perchow, Matt Doyle. Jonah Friedman and Greg Lawless were our managing editor and editor in chief, and we just kind of brought in like a super friends of, you know, American soccer like writers and stuff, and we just kind of
the best of the best from big soccer.
It was your big soccer fantasy team, but you know, social media was a new thing at that time, and they were kind of like, "Oh, you had some experience with social media. Can you just run this so we get someone more junior?" And I was like, "Yeah, we never got any more junior. I happen to be good at it, I guess." Because
so you were the intern that ran the socials?
You were the admin? Yeah, I was the admin for a long time. And I started doing this thing called MLS Insider, which, you know, at the time was, it seemed like it was different. Now everyone does it, right? The behind the scenes stuff. But no one was doing that at the time. And it was, I think it was pretty crucial for MLS because we didn't really know anything about the players back then. You didn't really know anything about the clubs back then. You saw.
The league wanted it that way too. I think it was Bobby Boswell. He started a YouTube channel, and he was just showing his personality, how funny. And the league was like, "You need to stop that right now. How dare you show your personality? Like, we're here to play soccer."
Bobby Boswell's blog, yo, like, low-key, man, that was like, I think that was the way forward. And he worked with that with a guy named Kyle Sheldon, who was a PR guy at DC, and he's been in a bunch of places.
He follows us. I feel like
he has an agency now called Name and Number, who does some really great work. But him and Bobby, that was like something they cooked up, and it was great because he was like the only guy that got it at the time. That people want personalities. They want to see this stuff. They want to know all the different things that you're doing. And they were kind of ahead of their time on that. But, you know, those days it was the Wild West. There were no rules yet on social media, you know.
That was also back then.
The rules
then
not get fired, basically.
MLS Transfers was a website that I used to go on when I was trying to learn more about the league. And some of the names linked with these clubs, you've never heard of them. People, their own team they were coming from had never heard of this player. It was some of the names that they'd be like, "I'm like, bro, you're making this up.
That's not a real person."
Yeah, bro, like Transfer Market ain't got this guy on it.
Yeah.
It was crazy. What a wild, wild west time.
Yeah it's just a... it's funny, you're just even hearing all those names, especially names like Simon Borg and Greg Loss, who started Extra Time. Were you there when Extra Time started?
Him and Shep Messing used to do that Extra Time show.
Yeah.
It was a video show, and then we kind of morphed it into the Extra Time podcast, and kind of everybody in the office kind of contributed. I was the last person to contribute. I contributed the least to that podcast because they're all very X's and O's guys, and they can really talk. I've never been able to like break down the game like that. Yeah. I want to talk
more
about
X's and O's.
Who was he dating? Yeah, exactly. That's what I want to know. Yeah. Straight up. I want all that.
That's such a great name for a goddamn show. I can't believe I sent this on air.
You just gave away the song.
That is what a bag I just brought. I just fumbled a massive bag.
If you're watching, go start a podcast that focuses on WAGs that name. I'm not going to repeat that name, but that's you.
Bro, I might do a show with a telestrator called X's and Hoes.
And that might be the one that makes money.
Where they go out to eat. Bro, what a good idea. Now it's mine.
So, no, it is a, you know, you look at the inception of a lot of these shows that a lot of people are, it's part of their routine now. But it's interesting just to hear, like, it didn't exist just a couple years ago.
No. And this is not that long ago.
Right. And with American soccer, there is a, you know, even for us, we've been doing the show long enough that now I sort of feel like this weird American soccer historian. Like, we have this body of work, and there's history to it, and there's stories. And, you know, when Alexis almost got arrested at LAFC Stadium for taking a shit, like, stuff like that. We're like,
culture.
It becomes part, you know? It becomes part of American soccer lore.
The lexicon, yeah. If you will.
Yeah.
The Alexicon.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Oh. The Alexicon.
Alexicon, X's, and
just giving away gems today.
Your idea, guys.
This
man.
Is a marketing meeting, and we didn't even plan it, dog.
Bro, I think we're just trying to impress.
So this has now become a press conference to announce the Cooligans is now an agency because everybody's an agency now.
But we really should have become
but that's,
an agency.
Do you sort of see yourself in that way to some degree of just like, wow, like you, after all this body of work, you've been a huge contributor to what the American soccer looks like nowadays?
I'll never say huge contributor. I'll say a contributor. Okay. I won't give a size because I feel like I don't want to get egotistical about it, but I feel like I put in my time.
You've not lived in New Jersey long enough. Yeah. If you were born there, you'd been like, of course I am.
Yeah.
I deserve all the
plugs. Texan humbleness about me. But no, man, I feel like there's a lot of folks, man, that just put in, it's time, man. To me, that's the thing. I met with this kid the other day, super smart kid, really enthusiastic about soccer. He's trying to get in the game, in the business side of it. And he's like throwing all these ideas at me. And I'm like, those are pretty good ideas. And he's like, which one do you think is the best? And I'm like, the one that lasts the longest. Because, like, time is the ultimate weapon, right? Like,
oof.
There are people out there who have...
Dimes being dropped here.
I stole that from Amazon's hit series Fallout.
Bro, stop saying that.
But it's true. I get all my references. I work in pop culture, man. Yeah. That's where all my references are. But it's true, man. Like, if you can... You don't have to be the first sometime. You don't have to be the best sometime. But if you're the one that lasts the longest, I'm sure there's Coke. There's colas out there probably better than Coke. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But Coke has just been there for
that's
sure.
also great
forever,
advice for
know?
Someone trying to get into porn. A male in particular. You just got to last the longest.
Right. Okay. Yes, the endurance part.
Not bad, right? I'll tell you where I got that.
Hi, kids.
They know what they got into
so,
when, they click, when they click play.
Are there any moments or you know pieces of work that you have made that make you the most, like, give you the most pride in those contributions?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing I'm most proud of is recently I got to do the creative direction on the asset to announce that the World Cup final was coming to New Jersey.
So
New Jersey, not New York.
New York, New Jersey.
New York height is like New Jersey.
you already knew that the final was going to be there and you had
to? No, that was the thing, man. I didn't know it was the final, but... I knew that the host committee, they were like, whether we get the final or not, we want to create something because we're in New York.
Of course.
We ain't just going to go out the door with whatever we get given. We want something special, whatever. So it kind of made a couple of versions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But all that's inside baseball. The fact that I'm not from Jersey, but I've been there 20 years. It's home. That's where I raised my kids. Jersey's been very good to me. I'm not a native, but I've lived amongst the people long enough to adopt their folk ways and things like that. So
there is a specific culture to it.
You're
also wearing the Asbury Park Football Club, which you are the creator.
I'm a
of
owner.
The Tillies.
The Tillies.
Yeah.
Biggest team you've never heard of.
Exactly. A lot of people know about Asbury Park Football Club, and I think a lot of people you know, a lot of people did what you did, right? A lot of people created sort of clubs afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, that's something, okay, here we go, ego. That's one thing I am proud of.
Go ahead, talk your shit.
But I'll give credit, Ben Hooper, my boy Ben Hooper, talk about an OG of American soccer culture, original winger, bumpy pitch.
Yep.
He said, Asbury Park Football Club invented a genre. And not many people can say that. And I feel like it did invent a genre. Whether you hate the fake football club thing or not, the Asbury Park Football Club is the blueprint for that. Yeah. There's been
the Godfather.
A thousand other people like do it.
But there is that era in which you started that, there was this hope for a big future in the sport. Probably not even as big as what it is right now, but there was a certain level of what's the word I'm looking for? A sort of groundswell of creativity.
Yeah.
And I don't think I see that anymore. I think the creativity now, there's like actual money behind it. So the creativity is more creative. if you will, like brand creative.
Yeah, and there's a lot of it out there, right? Yeah. I mean, I can rattle off 10 different amazing photographers right now that put out photography that 10 years ago you did not see anywhere, right? And every kit release now, I don't say all of them look the same, but boy, it's 8 out of 10.
There's a lot of Amelia Andor.
Amelia Andor is like the I don't know, like they probably have no idea, right? But they have created this whole sort of genre of soccer kit releases that just ape what they do. There's a lot of that out there, but I don't know, man. It's one of those things where like that era, there was some creativity out there, but what I think was really key is like there was so much in America, at least, there was so much hope and enthusiasm behind the national team. The U.S. national team in that moment was a golden era of talent, you know. And I think about Michael Bradley, Clint Dempsey, Landon Donovan, Tim Howard, Jermaine Jones, Fabian, who I just, you know, I'm sorry, never gets his due.
Yeah, I
love him. Josie. But there was such a good feeling before the tragic events of the 2018 World Cup, right? Yeah. But there was such a positivity that we were just on the way up, that there was a cultural trickle down in soccer. And you talk about things I enjoyed. I tell you, when I went to the Agency World, my first thing was working on Nike soccer. And this was wild because the agency I was working for, it was their first social media client. You think about that. Your first social media client is Nike. Crazy. But it was the Wild West of social media back then.
Hey, like, guys, we got a new client.
So,
the biggest brand you've ever heard of.
Yeah, you could kind of do anything, right? And Nike's one of those companies that, like, they just want to do different. You know, they just want to do different. And they just want to do better. But we sold them on this thing of, like, it was the lead up to the 2014 World Cup. And we're like, let's embed with the team for the Hex, for the whole year of qualifying. I think they played something like 18 games between the qualifiers and the friendlies. 18 games. And me and like cameraman and a couple of guys in my crew, we rode with them for 13 of those 18 games.
Wow.
Like police escorts through Mexico City, riding the team playing into Jamaica, the snow game in Colorado.
Wow.
Like, and that was a high, like not only a career, maybe a career high, but just as the soccer lover in me, like that was incredible. Like, I mean, remember when there was that article that came out? I think Brian Strauss wrote that article in Sporting News after they lost the first qualifier down in Honduras, I believe it was, that Jurgen had lost the team. Boy, big soccer was like melting down that day, right?
Because this was their guy. All wanted the European.
Yeah, and they got him. And like, this article comes out about, you know, how it's a disaster and he's lost the team. The German guys aren't talking to the American guys and da-da-da-da-da-da. That article comes out while they're at practice in Denver the day before that snow game against Costa Rica. I'm flying in, get my bag at baggage claim, turn my phone on. I got like 50 messages. Yo, did you read this article? I'm like, what is this article? So I start reading this article. I'm waiting for a rental car, and I'm like, oh, God, this is crazy. This is buck wild. Get to practice. Benefit of being with Nike. Closed-door practices.
Yeah.
Still got to – we got in. We had access. Yeah. We were documenting everything. They're doing the practice, and when they're coming off the field, it's like a morgue. It was a weird thing. Because usually, like, the guys would come off the field. You know, they're tired or whatever, but they're joking with each other. They're, like, hitting each other with a boot or making little jokes, Mike squirt water, whatever. None of that. It was like, you ever get a bad grade on your report card? And you know you're in trouble when you get home.
Yeah, of course.
So you kind of got a different demeanor about it.
I kind of remember getting a good grade. It
felt like that. Everybody was like, you know, whatever, whatever. That's, you know, it's not my business. That's the team business. But it definitely, you could feel Paul in the air. Go back to the hotel. We're like the Ritz-Carlton in Denver, nicest hotel I've ever stayed at in my life. At this point, I'm like, why am I here? But Nike that night was presenting to the team their team apparel that they make just for the team for the World Cup. Mm. We're all in this like meeting room in the hotel and they're presenting it or whatever. And it's cool. All right. Jurgen stands up. It's like, all right, thank you guys. Go. If everybody could leave, that's not with the team. We need to have a team meeting. So we're like, that's us. We're out. And then he says, no, everybody, players and coaches only. So even like the marketing people and PR people, everybody else who's with U.S. soccer, like leave the room.
Oof.
And they have like, all right, this article came out. We read it. Let's talk about it. Y'all married, man. Sometimes you just got to like, let's just do this. We're going to do this. Yeah, it sucks. We've got to rip the band-aid off. And they go in this room, and they're in there for, I don't know, hour and a half. And they have everybody says what needs to be said or whatever. Next day, go to the game. Snow comes down. They beat Costa Rica in the snow. It's great.
Yeah.
Everything
Nothing
was great.
Happened, bro.
No, they went there. They aired it out. Everybody talked their shit. Said what had to be said. And they went on a tear. They went on a tear qualifying. And that was funny because we were snowed in now.
Yeah.
We were supposed to go to Mexico City the next day. So we ended up spending an extra day in Denver. And Chris Tucker was doing stand-up around the corner. So they used to do these pep rallies. No, this is great. This is
what random.
No. So they used to do these pep rallies before like the qualifier games to get like, I say pep rally, but it was like a fan rally. You had all the AO guys there. Sometimes they had music. They'd have some of the players on stage talking, get everybody fired up. Alan Hopkins would host. They were great. So the theater they had that pregame pep rally in, like 2 days later, was having Chris Tucker. So we're hanging out after the game, and Hopkins is like, "Yo, I'm gonna call the theater and see if I can get his tickets for Chris Tucker." And he does. So me, Hopkins, Ivis, somebody else, we go see Chris Tucker, and it's hilarious. But we're up in the balcony. To paint the picture for you, this is March. In January, Colorado has just legalized weed. Uh-huh. And you've got the star of Friday on stage. Yo, this whole, there was no, you couldn't see shit.
Of course not.
It was so smoked up.
It was like a Bundesliga match. Yeah,
I was like, is there Tifo about to drop? Yeah. Like, what is going on here? And everybody was just, like, the whole theater, it's just like a 1,500 high people just yelling lines.
Yeah. Guy's trying to do his act.
He says, "Can I just do my act?"
Yeah. Oh my God. It's with Chappelle, when he was Rick James. Not Rick James, bitch. Couldn't do stand up for like 3 years because of it.
Oh my God.
I ever tell you about the time we saw Mickey Free in the Fort Lauderdale airport?
No.
Leaving the MLS combine?
Wait, I don't know who Mickey Free is. Who's Mickey Free?
You don't know Mickey Free is?
That wasn't he the musician?
Yeah, he was the one to skit the Rick James, well, in one of those Rick James.
Oh, in the story.
Charlie
okay.
Murphy's.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
When he's talking about Shalimar, I had a new girl. That girl wasn't the girl, that was the dude. It was Mickey Free.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how in LA, like, whoever looked the most feminine and had the most blouse, he got the most women. Like, we saw that dude.
Why was he coming out of MLS Combine?
Well, we were leaving Fort Lauderdale for the Combine. Yeah. It was me and a bunch of MLS.com people. And, he is like, so he's Seminole Indian.
Uh-huh.
He's black Seminole, what we have down in Florida. And so he's like the president of like the tribe's gaming commission. They have that huge Hard Rock casino.
That's right.
He's like the guy, but he's also a musician.
What a change of job.
So
Random. I want to know, because you've had this career for so long. Give us, because I think everyone has a moment. What's one moment where you thought, I don't think there's going to be MLS or an American soccer moving forward? I know there's probably a couple, but is there a moment in your career where you're like, I don't know if we can recover from this as an industry?
In my career, no. But before, absolutely. When I think of like the early 2000s, like I started going to MLS back in Dallas in college, and I would go see the Dallas Burn back at the old Cotton Bowl.
It was a horse whose legs were lightning bolts.
But he breathed fire.
And he breathed fire.
The most mythical creatures.
Who drew this? It was
that's who you should
horse.
Get on the show, man. The people artist? Who came in with the OG
What are we, Pablo
MLS?
Mars podcast?
Yeah.
Look at it. It is a...
Fire-breathing, lightning-legged horse.
And it's bad. The legs on the front legs are just not that well
done. Are they lightning bolts or is it like a peg leg? Is this like a...
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's
able
fractured peg legs. But yeah, lightning bolt legs.
Yeah.
And a fire-breathing. But yeah, so this is what you would go see.
Yeah.
And it looks like an indoor team.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was so 90s. All those original logos were just so 90s, man. But if you went to any games back then, like you go to the Cotton Bowl... In July, Dallas, Texas.
Oof.
It's hotter. I mean, it's 100 degrees.
Burn is because you got sunburn.
Yeah, exactly. They should have been sponsored by Banana Boat or something. I don't know.
Or a local dermatologist.
Yeah. But if you went to any of those games, you would be concerned about the future of it. Because it's an 80,000 seat stadium and there are 5,000-6,000 people. Rattling around. There's nobody there.
So where were you when you found out Lionel Messi is going to play in this league?
Oh, man, where was I? I was at home. I remember, actually, I do remember, because I was on a call with somebody, and I desperately wanted to get off the Zoom I was on, because, my phone was, blowing up.
Yeah.
Like, did you see Messi? And I'm like, I want to talk about this. I want to be on Twitter right now, But I'm like,
Yes, I think we can do that for you, Nike. And meanwhile, the world is open.
But the Messi one, I feel like we kind of saw it coming. Like there was a little bit of some smoke before that in the couple days before. The Beckham one I thought was bigger. That was like a left field because again, we didn't have Twitter. We didn't have all these podcasts. There weren't all these different outlets to talk about soccer. So when Beckham came out in a full page, I still have it in my basement in like a Ziploc, full page ad in the New York Times that Beckham is coming to America. That was like a holy shit. Like a holy, like this is actually happening. That came out of left field, I think, for everybody.
Really?
Yeah.
And no one had the scoop on that at all, right?
All right, I'm going to tell you something. Ooh. I knew about it, allegedly. I knew Nick Sakevich, the much maligned former GM of the Metro Stars. Every once in a while, he would take some of the supporters out to lunch before a game. And I went one. It was me and like five or six other guys. And he told us, and he had a reputation for saying a lot of things that never came to pass. So we were all very jaded fans. Like, I don't believe, but he said, you know, Ronaldo, OG Ronaldo, is going to go to New York and Beckham's going to go to LA. And we're like, okay, this is maybe him just talking pie in the sky, whatever. 9-10 months later, it came to pass. And I was like, wow, okay, maybe I should give him a pass and not be so harsh on
it. I can't wait till R9 shows up in a Metro Star.
Which never happened because as is Metro, you know.
Also, as is his knee.
Can you imagine that guy on turf? That would have been.
Oof.
Nightmare. I shouldn't say it, but I mean, look at Suarez, man. I mean, Suarez, like.
Hey, I stopped saying that after Chiellini. I'm like, ain't no way he's going to be able to keep up with this league.
Chiellini was.
Yeah. He was good.
He held his own.
Chiellini was good. You know, the one that disappointed me, though, your man's Pirlo. Oh, and I'm going to say this on record.
Let
I love,
that man have his vacation.
I loved Andrea Pirlo. You know what I'm saying? Like, I loved watching that man play. And then he came over here, and I was
and
like.
You didn't get the chance to see him play.
Yeah. It was like, when are you going to really start? Like, when are you going to really start? You know, but.
Look, we were disappointed as well. I mean, it was a. I think the moment that when he scored his first free kick.
His only goal.
Was it his only goal?
Yeah, one.
When he scored it, like 2 years after he signed or something like that, I was just like, why is he here? Like,
why? You couldn't even celebrate.
It didn't hit me until that moment because I was just like, yo, we have Pirlo on our team. What? This is incredible. And then he scored that goal, and I was like, Are we a serious team? Like, are we serious about trying to do? Because it was remarkable. But again, it was like the strategy back then, you know, was just to get butts in seats for NYCFC. But now that they have the stadium announcement, what this is another big milestone for American soccer.
New York has been a thing, right? It's no secret. New York, like, should be the biggest market in MLS, but it's probably the toughest market to crack, right? And it's always weird, right? Because people in New York, we kind of think that we're the center of the universe. And, like, how the hell are there 30,000 people in Nashville going to a soccer game, but we don't have the same thing here? And it's hard to kind of rectify and make sense of that sometimes. But I think that stadium is going to be a bit of a game changer. Like, if you think of Red Bull and Giant Stadium versus Red Bull Arena, it's not sold out every week, but it's definitely a markedly different experience.
Much more
enjoyable experience. I think this thing out in Queens, though, I think that I see that. Yeah, that's going to be packed every week. I think that raises the profile of the league and the city. Obviously, the question is, will it be enough to raise the profile of the league nationally? Not that they should have to bear that burden themselves.
Right. But that's always the burden on New York being.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you're in New York, you got to be the standard bearer for whatever your organization is nationally, globally.
So I think one of the things that I love about this podcast now is that we get to bring people in and give them their flowers. And what we said in the beginning is I think it's absolutely true about you. You are someone who carried the torch for the sport, at least in the world that we like. You know what I mean? In the demographic that we cared about, from the viewpoint that we cared about when we started, and to see you still being in the game and being on the agency side and the media side is absolutely incredible. But because you have seen the league for so long, I need a hot take. What do you see for the future of the sport in America?
Honestly, man?
Like a big hot take.
It's not even that hot. Okay, I'll give you two takes. One, I think the women's game right now is on a rocket ship, man.
Yep.
Like 100%. You go to Gotham games, man, it feels, I'm not saying it's better or worse, but there's a different vibe at a Gotham game than at a Red Bulls game. There's something that feels the obvious thing, right? It feels more feminine. It feels like less a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
Doing dude things. It feels very stylish. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm always, like, seeing people, I'm like, yo, I mess with your outfit. Like, you know, yeah.
People come fitted out. Yeah, yeah.
It's funny. It's not like, yeah, you go to, like, men's sports game, and everybody's like, right, I'm just wearing the jersey and the hat. Yeah. I'm putting as many pieces of... I want this logo on my body as many places as I can.
Right?
And you don't get that vibe there. But I think the women's game is on a rocket ship, and it's like, I think our society, hopefully, thankfully, is kind of in this place where we realize, oh, I can have more soccer. If I get over my ingrained sexism and all these mm-hmm. things, I can have more soccer. Yes, please.
Yeah.
That thing, I think, is interesting. My hot take, though, my hot take is honestly, I think the U.S. team right now has the potential to be better than the team I said is like the golden era.
Sure, kind of that is a hot take.
I know, because a lot of people, I know, but if you look at it, man, like on a real superficial level, you can pick a starting 11 right now that, you know, almost all 11 are playing it. You can do a starting 11, all 11 are playing in Europe, and they're not playing at some team in the Netherlands. They're not playing at some 15th ranked team in the Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. You got guys at Juve, you've got guys at, you know, Inter, you've got guys at Chelsea, like guys who are playing and can maintain at a top level team in Europe are turning out for this national team, and not just two or three. There's like a solid eight or nine.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're going to see, you know, in this Copa America, I hope is a real preview. I know we got a couple injury things like Dest and the goalkeeper. Yeah, that's a huge loss. The thing I really worry about, though, is the goalkeeping situation.
Yeah, no, we've never been this weak.
That is the weird thing, right? Because that's always been our, like...
our strength.
Yeah, don't even question it. Like, that ain't even a thing.
Right.
Like, we always had... We have goalkeeper controversies. Like, in the NFL, you have quarterback controversies. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, going back to days of, like, Brad Friedel and Casey Keller, right?
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, both of those guys were dope. Oh, and you still got Marcus Hannigan as a third? Like, mm-hmm. great, you know? But now it's like, ooh,
Yeah, well, let's get that 18-year-old in.
Who's going to do this?
All right. But. I like it. Giving your flowers, bro. It's just you even for us, laid down at least somewhat of a path, just some of a guideline of, like, how to operate the space, especially, you know, as minorities, as people even also coming from the comedy world. It's just like, we didn't know anything. We didn't know anybody. And, you know, just like Alexis assumes, like, you know, Kevin Brown just doesn't like him. That's... for the first few years, we're just like, nobody likes us. Nobody likes us. I have no idea.
Nobody's talking to us.
I don't know who Kevin Brown likes. There's that. But no, man, you guys, seriously, like, what you guys are doing, I think, is vital. And I'll give you all y'all flowers back, because it's like, nothing gets popular unless it's enjoyable, right? People want to enjoy something. And what you guys do is you provide some levity and some laughter that's a counter to that sort of, I'm right, you're wrong, this is how American soccer should be, that you see on Twitter.
We come into it as, we're both wrong.
We are so wrong.
It's just so much more enjoyable.
People want different, man. You know, I think of players. I'll go into a one last story.
Yeah.
I think of players, man. I think of personalities of players. I think of Clint Dempsey, and, like, you know, Clint Dempsey in his era.
You don't know where I'm from, dog.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that my Clint. Texas brethren.
Yeah, but put out a rap record.
He did.
Via Nike.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? That was different. We didn't know anything about American soccer players and who they are and their personalities on field. We didn't really know much about. But him, it was like, not only did we get to know him, and then what we got to know was so different than what people expect.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're down in Jamaica one time, national team practice in Trenchtown. It's like, it's hectic. I ain't gonna lie, right? It's hectic. Yeah. We got a police escort. When I tell you, the police is like, it's like four brothers that look like they just came out the Pele store with a penne on that says police, but like two letters have peeled off.
Yeah.
And they got like an M16, and they're rolling.
The gun is how you know.
Yeah.
The only real
big giveaway.
Like a Yankees hat.
Yeah.
Some Tim's, jeans, a polo, this penne that says police, and a machine gun. There's like four of these guys. Uh-huh. I'll show you a picture when we get off the air. That's like our police escort. And we were practicing at the stadium for Arnett Gardens, one of the club teams in Jamaica, middle of Trenchtown. It's like a hood, bro. Locals are just like walking into the stadium, just climbing over the fence, just coming in, like whatever. Bus, we roll up in the bus, and the players have their own bus, and then all us hangers-on are kind of in another bus. And we got police there, but they're not keeping anybody away from the buses. People are just standing there, just like waiting to watch people come off the bus. At the time, Clint is playing at Tottenham.
Uh-huh.
For reasons I don't know, Tottenham is one of the more popular clubs in Jamaica. I think because it's North London,
yeah, a lot of the Jamaican diaspora,
the back group. But Tottenham is like one of the clubs. Clint comes off the bus, and everybody's come off the bus. Nobody's saying Michael Bradley. He's at, I think, Aston Villa at the time. Nobody says anything. Tim Howard's at Everton at the time. Nobody says anything. Clint Dempsey walks off the bus. Clint Dempsey, bad man. Like, just like what? If you know Clint messes with a lot of black folks.
Clint gets a pass.
Yeah.
He gets a Latino pass. He gets a black pass. He gets a pass.
But like they were just bigging him up.
Like, Clint Dempsey, like, boy.
And he does a smile on his face. Yeah. And everybody else, everybody's laughing. It was like, okay.
Landon Donovan is just grinding his teeth. And no one knows who he is.
Yeah, it was just so. But again, like, when you have a unique personality like he is, and crucially, when your personality off the field and on the field, they match with that guy. You know what I mean? Like, he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. He is confident. He is unafraid to say what's what. You know, his show on Golazo with Mo and everybody else.
Like, kicking it.
Kicking it, man. Like, you know, like, people love that. You know, and I think the more players in American soccer, whether that's clubs, leagues, whatever, embrace that like, people want to see the personality, they want to see who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
The more we do that, the more success there's going to be. And the more there's people like you who do things that are authentic and genuine, where it's like, this is y'all just being y'all's funny, ridiculous.
I love it. Yeah,
dumb.
I mean,
our dumb selves.
So, I mean, the Cooligans are the Clint Dempsey of American soccer.
And you don't know where we're from.
Yeah, you from Newark.
Yeah. All right, no, you do know where I'm from,
Which is scarier.
Yeah.
It's the Nagadoches.
The Nagadoches of North Jersey.
Yeah, of Jersey. Yeah.
Sean Francis, bro, thank you so much for coming through and taking the time. I can only say we are all sorry for it taking this long for you to finally have joined us on
the
show.
It's a shame on the show.
But you're welcome anytime. Yes. Absolutely full of incredible stories. I know a lot of.
We could talk to him for like another 4
hours.
Yeah,
yeah.
Let's do a Christmas special.
Yeah. Oh, let's go. Let's do a Wayne Gretzky, whiskey special.
Oh, we should do a whiskey special.
A little dark liquor, episode.
Okay, well, I'm going to last Round 6 liquor. Minutes. Yeah.
Well, that's when the fun starts, when the guy who keeps time goes to bed.
But Sean, thank you so much. Everybody, go follow Sean Francis on Twitter or on Instagram, at The Offside Rules.
And check out his Tumblr.
I never had one when they were in.
My man is still doing a bunch of great work in American soccer. So go out and support, man. Sean Francis, thank you so much for joining us. As always, make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all socials, Instagram, TikTok, everywhere, before it's banned completely. So do what you got to do. And subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/soccercooligans. We got a dope community on there. And shout out to everybody watching on DraftKings Network as well. All right, everybody. Oh, just one more thing. Our producer, Miguelito, today's his last day in studio.
What?
He's not leaving. He's not leaving us.
No, I'm not leaving. I'm staying here, whether you like it or not.
But he will be like AI. He's going to be here virtually.
AI Mike, he's going to, he's moving to Miami to.
Taking his talents to South Beach.
Helping
out with the big show a little more.
Exactly. So. It's a Levitard show. He's going to go watch, he wants to watch the Heat lose at home.
I do.
When is your testimonial?
So this is his last episode in studio.
I'll be back.
He's a New Yorker, tried and true. It's all good.
I'll be back and forth. He won't be here.
Wait till you see how they drive down there. He'll be back.
Yeah, I'll be back.
Okay, so
I'll try the pizza. I'll be back.
But you'll still hear him on the show. He'll be producing remotely. But we're obviously gonna miss seeing his face and him sitting in that seat. But obviously happy that we still get to work together.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, everybody. So we'll see you next week on Monday. Another fun episode. Again, shout out to Sean Francis. See you in a couple days, everybody. Peace.
Love you guys.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.